All right, folks, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron.
This is
Renee
Dupuy
Finnegan.
And Psychic Tom
Patton.
Crystal ball raring to go with predictions.
Oh, together again. It's amazing. I do want to start off with kind of a sad story. Rafael Garcia, guy I saw in person, and his friendship with Floyd Mayweather Jr. out there in Vegas, and I actually have a YouTube clip that is got 1,000 views in just a day because it shows actually Rafael dancing after Floyd sit-ups right in the ring with Floyd, so it was a pretty funny moment. And I found out actually about this death because somebody wrote in the comments, RIP Rafael Garcia. So I was like, oh, geez. And I could laugh about looking back at Garcia, but he was a cut man and a hand wrapping guy, kind of like Stitch. He was one of the originals. We would wrap the hands and paste you up in the middle of the fight.
Well, that was a nasty comment that guy made about him.
Oh yeah, what an asshole, huh? Some asshole. The first comment on the story of his death. If anybody had seen it, I think it was on Boxing Scene, but the guy wrote, he's in Floyd's corner, so I'm glad he's gone, basically. What an asshole.
What the hell? What are you thinking?
But this guy wrapped Floyd's hands for years. I think there was one fight where they had a little bit of a falling out, and Floyd went to a different guy, but he went right back to Rafael and changed his life financially from what I've read. And I saw their relationship just going to the press event that I went out there. But I had a good laugh today because on the comments, I put the video on somebody's comment about Garcia dying on Facebook. And I mentioned that it was for the Ortiz fight. So somebody wrote back, you know, a funny comment. And I said, well, actually, Rafael probably worked harder than anybody that night. You know, what happened with Ortiz, with the headbutt and the hug, and great to talk about a phantom punch. I mean, it was a good shot, but Ortiz will always look at it as a phantom punch because he never saw it coming. Never saw it. But actually, Tony, we're long overdue. We had like more of the MMA report, because you know how Tom and I are. We get to talking about combat sports, and we heavily lean towards the mixed martial arts. So, everybody out there listening to Fight News Unlimited show, we got no idea what's going on in boxing. We had all these heavyweight fights go down. We didn't really talk much about those last week. Now there's a rivalry going on between Deontay Wilder and Anthony Joshua. It looks like those two are going to finally get a fight. They pretty handily defeated their opposition. So they're right on the same wavelength and schedule. They ought to fight soon. But nothing's been announced yet.
I'll tell you what I saw. Those fights. You had the Joshua fight, and he fought what's the guy's name? Takam, from Cameroon.
Right.
Tough guy. You know, really tough fighter. And you know, but it was one sided. And Joshua really beat him up. He had knocked him down. And I thought the corner could have stopped it a few rounds before they did. When the referee stopped it, it was like a lull in the action during the round. And the referee steps in and stops it, which then turns it into like a controversial stoppage. It's like, why did you stop it then? There was no reason for the fight to be stopped at that moment. If you would have stopped it two rounds earlier, it had some validity to it. And then people were turning around saying, well, maybe it's just Takam should get a rematch. Why? He lost every round. He took a beating. No. Then you turn around next week, which had a very intriguing fight on tap between Deontay Wilder and Luis Ortiz, which then got canceled because of Ortiz's positive drug test. So they brought back Bermain Stiver, who Wilder originally won the title from 3 years ago. And at that time, because Wilder was 20-something and 0, all by knockouts, had never gone past like 4 or 5 rounds, so he was an underdog against Stiver the first time, and he boxed very well, and, you know, he won a decision, the only time he's ever gone the distance, and he wins that fight, and then Stiver was trying to complain he was dehydrated. Wilder goes, well, why is a heavyweight dehydrated? That makes no sense, you don't have to make weight. Yeah, right? Coming soon, but, you know, don't dehydrate yourself, that's ridiculous. So, when the Ortiz fight falls out, they put Stiverne back in, for really no reason, except just to keep this date, so they can hopefully go through this lucrative, heavyweight matchup between Joshua and Wilder. I knew that fight was going to be god-awful hot garbage. From the moment I saw Stiverne back in the locker room, they were talking to him, and he's sitting there, he's almost got his head down, he's got his arms drooped, and they're talking, he's like, and he's trying to say, like, yeah, he's coming in shape, and this and that, and it was like, with no enthusiasm. Now, I can understand when you're trying to focus, and you can sit there, like some of the great competitors back then, like, take a guy like Joe Willis. Joe Willis would sit there, with a steel glaze on his eyes. Marvin Hagler focused and intense. But you could tell by looking at them, to be cliche right now, they have the eye of the tiger. Stiverne, I wouldn't even call that the eye of the panda bear. He was sitting there with nothing. And I turned to my dad, I'm like, this fight ain't gonna last long. I was expecting 2, maybe 3 rounds, not a minute and a half. And then Stiverne tries to turn around and said, oh, he hit me in the back of the head. So, I remember saying to my dad, and I remember saying to a couple guys at the gym, I'm like, hey, yeah, I watched the replay of that fight, and that first knockdown was definitely a shot in the back of the head. Which, if you watch it, it was a clear 1-2 right down the pike. And they're like, what are you talking about? I said, yeah, he hit him so hard in the face, it basically landed like it went through his head. It went through his face to the back of his head. And he hit him in the back of the head. And just threw his face. But in all honesty, I think Stiverne should have his purse, at least a good bit of it, held up. Good for just an absolute non-effort.
Penalty.
So in other words,
He definitely, I guess, didn't want redemption, huh? No part of that. But, yeah. I think the first fight was probably a little better, huh?
Basically,
more rounds. Yeah. Anyway, last weekend, there was some good fights. Artur Beterbiev beat Enrico Kohling. Liam Smith beat in the Battle of the Liams, beat Liam Williams. Assuming that was over in the UK. We had the big baby. Got to win Jarrell Miller over Marius Wach. Also had...
Wach, that guy's got a freaking chin. I'm not talking about like a good chin, I mean just a big chin.
Yeah.
You and, throw a punch behind your back, you hit the guy with a chin.
And of course, Daniel Jacobs getting the big win over Luis Arias. I believe that was a handy decision. So... No surprise there. So anyway, upcoming boxing, we have, let's see, a little bit of schedule in front of us. Two big ones, it looks like, this weekend, Saturday, Zolani Teat versus Boniso Gonia. I don't know what the heck that is about. And then Jerwin and Sargent versus Jamie Conlon. It must be a UK fight. And then we got next Saturday, Sergey Kovalev in action versus Vyacheslav Shabransky. Who I don't think is a world beater, but see what he has left. And December 2nd, we're coming up on probably Miguel Cotto's last fight ever. Against Saddam Ali. No relation to Hussein.
Or Muhammad.
Or Muhammad, there you go. Anyway. Other boxing news. Evander Holyfield's back in the promotional game. The Real Deal Promotions. I think we published a couple things on our website about it so far. So we're hooked in. Let's see what else we got going on.
Oh, did you guys hear Oscar De La Hoya's thinking of making a comeback?
Oh, yes. Oh, no, that's not the only guy, Tom. Come on. Look into your crystal ball. Tell me about the other guy.
let's see. I'm hearing Irish music in the background.
Ricky Hatton. Ricky Hatton, yes. Both of them have talked about coming back. Like, seriously. But Oscar wants Conor. Big surprise, right, because remember all the trash talk he had to say about the fight with Mayweather in the first place? So... What a hypocrite, huh?
How money can change things. But you notice something? There's been zero response and zero in fan enthusiasm about this. Nothing. It's like Oscar's in an echo chamber, kind of yelling to himself. And wouldn't it be something if McGregor would say, we'll do it, but we're going to do it in the cage, not the ring? That's what I would say about that. Yeah, he said Oscar's, what, 44 now?
Wow.
Okay. The question is he an old 44? That's the question.
Yeah.
That's not a good answer. You're probably right. That's not a good answer. It does not bode well for a comeback.
Well, you can ask me that in 4 years.
He got decimated, and he looked like he was about 65 in that fight against Manny Pacquiao. And, he's had, admittedly, substance abuse problems. And anybody will tell you, that drains you more than anything. It's like, part of the reason that guys like Bernard Hopkins and Sugar Ray Robinson and all them were able to fight effectively for so long. Even Rory Jones Jr., who obviously didn't longevity is their clean living.
Right.
You know, I remember even the one time, it was, I think it was like Sugar Ray Robinson when he was getting ready to have the rematch with Gene Fulmer. I think it was him. And he was in training camp, and, you know, he was just like, they said he was, it hadn't clicked yet. And he was really, you know, he was having some concerns. And I forget who had come into his camp. It was, that was former world champion, and I keep wanting to think Mickey Walker or someone like that. No, and it wasn't Mickey Walker, but somebody like that, a former world champion like Barney Ross or somebody, and came in, and then, you know, it's like, you know, Sugar Ray Robinson is drinking really hot au jus, you know, and the other one's drinking black coffee and brandy.
Yeah, that's too bad. Sorry, I'm getting distracted.
You have to wonder, what do you think is driving Oscar for that, though? I mean, he's still involved in the game that he loves. He's made a lot of money in his career. He's probably doing okay as Golden Boy promotions. What the heck happened? What do you think he's got into his head? Doubt it, you know, because he's been away too long and he's unproven. Yeah.
So,
and,
I doubt
Tony
it.
Tony had a good point. I mean, his lifestyle was not conducive to a long career. Some of the roads he went down, from what I read. So,
yeah,
probably the prudent thing would be stay retired. But you guys know there's no excitement like it. There's no lifestyle like it. There's a lifestyle, you've got all that purpose, all the excitement. Names up in lights, it's like being a rock star. Hard, so hard to walk away. Being a promoter's okay, but it's different.
And, Tony, I know I sent you the article, but what do you think about, we didn't get a chance to talk about it, what do you think about Dana White saying he's getting involved in boxing for sure? Promoting boxing.
I don't really get a chance to read it, because I've been working on a couple projects this week, but, I can see a positive and a negative. You know, can he be a modern-day version of a Don King, that bombastic and, you know, really type of in-your-face promoter? Yeah, he could. And he could be a guy that, you know, he goes out there and signs a lot of fighters because, you know, the networks will want to buy his shows just because of who he is. But then again, on the negative, you know, boxing is a different game than UFC. Now, Don King back, especially like in the late 80s, early 90s, when he was trying to get that monopoly with the Tysons, and then he would get his champions, and basically, to get a fight with one of his champions, even if you were the number one contender, you basically had to, like, sign your rights to him. So if you won, he had you. And I can see Dana White trying to do that as well. Like, basically, like, that type of monopoly. Well, right now, time to hate. It's never maybe easy to work for the guys like Mayweather Promotions and Bob Arum with Tom Brady. We saw the rigmarole they had a couple years ago. Where Golden Boy Promotions and, you know, Top Rank or Mayweather Promotions and Golden Boy Promotions, so on and so forth, because everybody wants to be the top dog. Everybody wants to get the lion's share. Everybody wants to put their name on the marquee as, hey, I'm the one putting this show together. So, will he be willing to work with other promoters? Because remember, in the UFC, he basically has the monopoly going. It's like, you know, it's my show, and I sign the fighters, and if they're not winning, I basically just throw them out on their ear and let them go somewhere else, because I run this town. And in boxing, it doesn't really work like that. So, I can see good, I can see some not so good.
You're supposed to say he sucks. We all know he sucks, and he's gonna fuck up boxing. That's the answer I was looking for. No,
I'm just kidding. I'm trying to be diplomatic.
No, I agree with all that. I mean, he could be good for it in some respects, but it makes me go back to what I kept saying before the Mayweather fight. I'm surprised that he's not setting up more MMA versus boxing matches. And maybe this is what he was waiting for. Maybe it was to be under his own banner. Maybe he is that smart, but I don't know. Maybe that's giving him too much credit. I don't know if anybody could have predicted that to be such a big fight, even with it being a little bit of a letdown for most fans of pure boxing. But I think it's a better chance than Mayweather or McGregor versus De La Hoya is McGregor versus Malik Naji. The grudge match. I think that'll be the funnier fight, too, because that's one McGregor will probably win. Malik Naji will finally have to shut up about it. But that's the easiest fight for him, too, I think, out there.
Can you imagine the trash talk from both of those guys? Wouldn't that be worth the... I mean, even if the fight would never come off, it would just be great if we could have like 3 months of that trash talk. Both guys could be world class.
I could do like a whole reality show, like The Ultimate Fighter, if Malik Naji wanted to fight bad enough to agree to do a fight in the cage too, after the fact. That would be awesome.
That would be great. that would be great.
Talk about selling tickets, but sometimes that's what it comes down to. But talk about that, Conor McGregor being the character that is putting asses in seats. He actually made a horrific cameo appearance at Bellator 187 last week, and literally bitch slapped a Bellator official right in the face on his way. Trying to get back into the cage to celebrate with his buddy, and he already had history with the ref, because I think he was in Australia with the ref, and he was cheering on one of his other friends, or training partners, or somebody that, you know, he was trying to be a cornerman for, and I don't think he was a registered cornerman. And he basically was screaming stuff that was inappropriate and just being obnoxious, and the ref told him to shut up and get away from the friggin' cage. And so this time he jumps in. He's pissed off that the ref hasn't stopped the fight yet. There's 1 second left in the round and the ref hasn't even stopped the fight yet. Conor comes raging in, jumps right over the cage, pretty much tackles his own guy. His own guy has to look up Charlie Ward and figure out, oh geez, that's Conor. He doesn't even know if a fan's attacking him or what. And the guy John Redmond is still kind of out cold and woozy, and Conor's like distracting people from tending to this guy because he's acting like a nutcase, and he's shoving the ref around and screaming at the ref because he's got history with him, and it was just disgusting. But,
it was a lot of confusion. I was wondering, if your guy won, what the hell are you so mad about?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm thinking, okay, I thought he was Ward's teammate. Was he the other guy's teammate and thinking it was an early stoppage?
Well, he sort of explained himself. He said that, you know, his anger stemmed from seeing a guy in the cage die, as we know, in his, one of the UK fights there that he was in the stands for, and, you know, rooting in the guy's corner, the guy that won the fight, killed somebody. So, you know, he saw a death right before his eyes at an MMA fight over there in the UK. So he knows firsthand, you know, what the result is. So on any kind of a smaller show than the UFC, where there is no history of any kind of a serious incident like that happening due to a fight, you know, you don't think about it as much, but any kind of lower tier show, you're always thinking about it, especially with Bellator coming so close with the Dada 5000 incident. You know, the guy had kidney failure and heart failure pretty much in the ring, in the cage. Who knows what saved him? But anyway, Charlie Ward got the win, knockout, 1 second left in the first round. And Connor, at first, put out an angry tweet, and then 2 days later, mysteriously apologized. Turns out, the guy who's like president of the Association of Boxing Commissions was in the stands, and that was his event, so he actually put out a statement too against Connor's behavior, which was interesting. It's goes to show you might have some difficulty getting back in the ring.
Supervisor of the referees. They need to stop the fight from Connor's face, they should. Yeah. Okay.
And on that card,
him putting out that retweet of regret says maybe it didn't go that way behind closed doors, you know?
Yeah. And it was in Dublin, Ireland, so you might forgive Connor. He probably had a few in him. A few pints of Guinness. Anyway, AJ McKee was the headliner. He's remained undefeated with a technical submission, rear naked choke. I don't know what makes that a technical submission, Tom. I'm not that big of a fan.
I mean, you crank something, the guy taps. Oh. Okay, yeah, that's technical.
I was hoping you'd explain that.
Mark Holman fights and cap guys from Canelbury. They don't want to get their neck broke.
They came in the third round with 42 seconds into that round. Brian Moore.
That was an interesting fight. Moore was giving it a good fight for a while. Then he slipped going at the beginning of the round. Well, it was frustrating because, you know, I think he was coming on in the second round. I was looking forward to see how it was going to go, and then he fell down.
Whoops. Slip. Anyway, Sinead Kavanaugh beat Maria Casanova by TKO 34 seconds into their fight from punches. Not a big surprise there. Casanova, she don't even have a picture on Sherdog. That's how much experience I guess she has. But neither does Kevin Ferguson Jr.'s opponent here. How about this for a name? And I love his nickname, because this is actually the first fight I watched. They did televise this one. They call him Kevin Ferguson Jr. on his Sherdog page, but everybody else knows him as Baby Slice, Kimbo's kid. But his opponent's name was Fred Freeman. And guess what Fred Freeman's name was, his nickname? No, the Demon. Fred the Demon Freeman. And Baby Slice put him in a rear naked choke, so that's good news that he has some extra skills. He doesn't just come there to brawl like his dad. Rear naked choke, first round, 1 minute and 57 seconds in, and he looked pretty impressive. I mean, he has a good style. He's definitely trained very well, takes it seriously, seems to be in good shape. Doesn't obviously have the knockout power of his dad or the beard, but we'll see what happens with him. It's good to see him on TV and getting some confidence and building his record, but, you know, one thing I was always pretty disturbed about was how the Bellator left his father with fights in situations where they knew the commission was going to be a little lenient on his steroid use, and I think they pretty much knew he was going to use steroids. He said it in public, he said it in interviews, that he was okay with it, and him and Ken Shamrock both agreed that steroids were cool before their fight, and hence they both get popped for steroids in Texas. And now they're trying to do a big old Kimbo's legacy, and they're giving bobblehead dolls away of Kimbo Slice. And I think they kind
of
had a role.
Yeah,
and it's cool. He's a cool guy and everything, but I mean, I hope they're paying his family a lot of money because they're still using that guy, and I think they kind of under the radar encouraged him to, or at least enabled him to use steroids and get away with it. And especially because not only did they do it twice in Texas where the rules were lenient, but Kimbo, before he died, was scheduled to have a rematch with James Thompson. If you remember that fight, it's probably more famous for anything because he popped his cauliflower ear.
He gave
him the doctor's treatment in the cage. Yeah, and guess where that fight was going to be? In the UK, where when an organization goes to the UK, they're responsible for their own testing if they come from America. So, what does that tell you? They were going to let him do steroids for that fight, too, if he lived. So, I don't like that whole thing about Bellator. It's one thing I hold a grudge against them for, because I don't think they literally killed Kimbo Slice, but they didn't make him, they didn't help him out any. Basically, as you know, the one reason why George St. Pierre got back to the UFC is because they did give him credit, go to a much stricter drug testing policy. I know USDA covers pretty much all MMA athletes, but the UFC did definitely crack down on it, and it's costing them. Even though it's costing them, they've done it. Anderson Silva, moving on, just popped again by the drug testing too. Just recently, so it's obviously.
What was the substance, Rich? I haven't got the story on that.
All I read was that he's contesting it. He's supposedly having his doctors look at everything. I could make a joke and say early word in is that he's using the Jones, no bone Jones approach and claiming it was stimulant. I don't know.
Was it an anabolic substance?
I have no idea right now, but I mean, if he's contesting it, chances are it's probably. If it's just, I mean, I think it just came out because I just read it out today and I hadn't seen anything about it before then. But let me just go to the main page and see if there's anything about it. We had left last week's show off talking about where the legends of MMA, like there are legends of boxing, Tony, and it was an interesting question because...
Yeah, that was interesting. I don't know if you mentioned any of that to Tony, but what set this up, Tony, was when I was watching UFC, a lot of guys from my gym, they're a lot younger than me, and a lot of them aren't into boxing now because, you know, they were born in the 80s, and they just kind of grew up with MMA, but they know about the boxing legends, and they love hearing me ramble on about those days. They're fascinated by it. And their question to me was, where are the MMA legends? Because we're still talking about Rocky Marciano. We're talking about Neil Lewis. We're talking about Jack Dempsey, Mike Tyson, Muhammad Ali, Sugar Ray Robinson, Jacob LaMotta. I mean, these are giant names that we're still talking about. Are we still talking about, does the average person know much about the UFC? And I've had a few different theories on it. Maybe the culture's changed because we don't talk about today's boxing champions like we did then. But I want you to weigh in on that, Tony. What's just your gut reaction on that?
Well, you know, that is a great question. Part of the thing I would say on this, I'm growing up in a boxing type of household, you know, you figure Marciano had passed away 7 years before I was born. Joe Frazier only had one fight after I was born, and that was in 1980.
Jumbo Cummings. 81 against Jumbo Cummings.
Yep. a lot of these guys, you know, I wasn't alive to watch live. Obviously, Jack Dempsey, Joe Louis, Sugar Ray Robinson, these were all guys that, Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali only had a handful of fights during my lifetime, and the last one, I think I was 4 years old. Right?
Let's see, 81 against Trevor Burbick, when they had the, he didn't even have the original, they had to get the gloves from the guys in the semi. How about that?
Yeah. Wow. So I think a lot of it has to do with boxing back in the day used to be mainstream. And I'm talking about, you know, when my father was growing up, and then, you know, during his, you know, youth to early adulthood. And I'm saying going back to, I'll say, the mid-80s, before it started getting, I think what really hurt boxing was the alphabet soups. I think that was the big time start of the downfall. And not, I don't want to say downfall, that's a poor word. A part of the loss of mainstream coverage. Because you don't even know who, like, okay, who's the welterweight champion of the world? And, you know, most people right now are like, oh man, I don't know. Well, back in the day, you knew it was Ray Leonard or Oscar De La Hoya or whoever. Or even before that, it was, you know, Christ, now I'm forgetting names, Jesus Christ. A guy like Jose Napoles and things like that. Because there was only one champion weight class. So, and I remember even back in the day, you know, back about 20 years ago or 25 years ago, you could sit there and say, Tony, who's the IBF welterweight champion of the world? And I could sit there and say, oh, that's Felix Trinidad. Right off the top of my head. Easy. You know, but then it got to the point where not only did they have three major titles, then it became four. Then it became five. Then it became super champions. Recess. You know, interim champions and all that. Right now, if you said to me, Tony, who is the IBF welterweight champion of the world? I'm like, well, shit, is it Keith Thurman? I think it's Keith Thurman, but I'm not sure. And I'm the Rain Man, right? So I think that's part of a problem. But going back when there was one fighter or one champion per weight class and boxing was mainstream, you knew who these guys were. There was newspaper coverage. You would open up the paper, and if there was a big fight, you know, the night before, it was in there. If, like, there was a big fight coming up, Tyson Holyfield, that was, you know, they had it breaking down in the paper, like, oh, man, this one's coming up, this one's going to happen. So you got to really have investment in these guys, and these guys were larger than life, you know? I think that's why there is such a focus on the legends, because guys like me, you know, from my father, talking about the Rocky Marcianos, Jake LaMotta. Hey, my dad, he was young, but I remember, as you say, I remember, you know, my father, you know, listening to the St. Valentine's Day Massacre or something like that. And I remember when Marciano died, I was in Korea, and they were like, the champ is dead. You know, things like that, you know, that these guys were so big. Another thing, Olympics. You knew who your Olympians were. Ring Magazine, back up until about maybe 1996, would break down your entire U.S. Olympics team and say, this is your guy at 140 pounds, and say it was Oscar De La Hoya, and this is his main opposition, you know, or, you know, the guys that are going to give him the most trouble. Here are his chances of winning a gold medal. So before these guys ever threw a punch for pay, you were invested in them, and you cared about them. And you wanted to follow their careers from the day they stepped in that first time as a professional. That's why I think your fighters of yesteryear get more publicity than your fighters of...
You know, that's so true, because we had every week back in the 80s, there was, I mean, as far as Ray Mancini, the country fell in love with him.
Yeah.
How could you not? Yeah. How could you not fall in love with Ray Mancini? Even though Alexis Aguayo was a great guy, we knew about him, too. And we could identify with these guys as people outside of, not just in the fight game, but in their lives. And that loss of mainstream television has been devastating. That's why PBC, you know, I haven't seen as much from PBC lately. I'm hoping they can hang on, because has had such a good trend in the right direction. But yeah, that has a lot to do with it. I mean, I'm telling you guys, and I know you know this, but every week in the 80s, it was sometimes even on Sundays. We could have fights during the day on Sunday. I could come back from the gym after a Sunday morning workout. NBC was having tournaments then. All three major networks, ABC, NBC, CBS, Joe Clancy and Jim Ryan on CBS, NBC, Freddy Pacheco. He had his critics, they called him the fight doctor sometimes. He'd stop the fight, you know, but I like him. I look forward to it. Alex Waller won ABC. I mean, they're just constant stuff. And
yeah, I think you have something you used to really look forward to, Tom, along the same lines. You know, and it was starting to wane a little bit, you know, when I really, really became a big-time boxing fan in the late 80s, early 90s. They were still doing, you know, occasional shows on your Wide World of Sports or your CBS on the Saturday and Sunday afternoons. So this is, you know, before the days, you know, you don't have internet and stuff like you do now. So every Tuesday, we would get our TV guide the upcoming week. And the first thing I would get is I would go home the Saturday and Sunday sports breakdown of what was televised just to see if there were fights that were going to be televised on those 2 days.
Yeah. And there was just so much going on. And there was some talk, too, after the Mancini Kim tragedy, that didn't help, put it that way. I can't say that was instrumental in dialing it back, but I'm not sure if we could quantify the effect that had as far as the advertisers pulling back, as far as the networks pulling back, but it's true that the culture of the country's changed away from boxing, and MMA never really did have a major presence on free TV. It's been on a few times, but not that often. Maybe that has a lot to do with it, too. For sure. And like you said, all these champs, I mean, back then, everyone knew who the champs were. If you were a boxing fan, for sure.
Yeah.
Even a casual fan would know. And now, it's like the welterweight champ, well, we got six of them. Which one?
Yeah, right.
I think some of the... some of the failure of marketing, too, of the legends of mixed martial arts from that perspective, as opposed to boxing, you don't see as many legends of mixed martial arts, is because a lot of them, after the UFC, have wanted nothing to do with the UFC. Especially Chuck Liddell was really burnt when they got rid of his special job with the UFC. Randy Couture, of course, is probably the number one guy with a grudge against the UFC. And just guys like that built the sport and then moved away from it after retirement. And not only they want nothing to do with the UFC, but the UFC still owns all their footage. So they control everything, and if you don't go through the UFC to buy it, you're not going to see it. So even after they move on to other organizations, they've had trouble with not being able to provide footage. Roy Nelson, who went to Bellator, and he famously joked, well, you know, I had to give Bellator some footage, so I went all three rounds with this guy in my first fight for Bellator. So it's sad that it's come to that, but, you know, and then obviously you get more people attracted to a sport that pays better, and boxing, I think, still pays better for their superstars. And Conor McGregor might change that a little bit, especially with UFC talking about getting into boxing and getting some of that money from that side, but I think it's going to take a little bit more than a guy like McGregor, who's still a kind of Johnny-come-lately in my eyes. He's not really proven himself like everybody thinks he has, just because he's had some big, magnificent wins. He's just, as a person in general, I don't like his attitude about a lot of things. And, you know, there was all this news about him supposedly going before Congress, and we've seen nothing since then. So I don't know who came out with that report, but I don't think that's happening. He's having more trouble trying to negotiate his return to the UFC than talking to Congress. Anyway. Maybe he'll throw some water bottles at some congressmen. One of them will sue him for $5,000. Anyway, yeah, I just I'm curious to see what happens with that, because I as much as I don't like his style and his bravado and his attitude about some things, I love the fact that he kicks the UFC in the nuts every chance he can, and he's trying to get a piece of it for himself, like they would do. You know, it's kind of giving them their own medicine. I mean, that's the child that you brought up, fellas. That's kind of just kind of the monster you created. And don't worry, folks, if the UFC folds, Dana White is going to go work with kids in Vegas. How'd you like that, Tony? That's his plan. He's going to go work with the school system. Yeah. That'll be funny. He's going to teach him how to run away from mobsters in Boston and hide in Vegas for a couple years. Bellator does have a big event coming up this weekend in Tel Aviv, Israel.